Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey, it's your boy, Ramley John. Welcome to this episode 105 of Growth Marketing Today. And today we're going to be talking about e-commerce email marketing and this special 22 email series that has made $150,000 for this specific e-commerce brand. With all the hype surrounding social media platforms like TikTok or Instagram in recent years, it's easy to forget that email remains the most profitable channel for driving business today. Email marketing has a median ROI of 122%. It consistently and overwhelmingly beats out other marketing formats like social media, direct mail, and paid search. To put that into perspective, this is more than four times higher than any of those other marketing formats. And one of the types of emails with the highest engagement and open rates is the welcome email series. In this episode, Summer, an email strategist and conversion copywriter, reveals her 22 email sales generating welcome series for e-commerce brands. I was just as shocked as you are to find out that her best performing welcome email series is 22 emails long. How is that even possible? But her campaign has generated over $150,000 for an e-commerce brand that she worked with. In episode 105, you'll learn first the common email marketing mistakes e-commerce brands make that's costing them conversions and sales. Second, the email sequence some are created for copyhackers.com. And third, how to design a cart abandonment email series that's not creepy. Now, before we jump in, I actually put all together all the actionable tips, lessons, and insights from this episode in a one-page cheat sheet. Why take notes when you can just steal mine? You can take all the lessons in this PDF, apply it to your business, and accelerate the growth of your company. Go to growthtoday.fm/105 to download it now. I only have this available until next week when I publish the next episode. So download it now before I take it away. Also, I want to thank those who made this episode possible. These folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from, like Summer. I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are a RevOps and demand generation shop. You can check them out at 42.agency/GMT. That's FourtyTwo.agency/GMT for a free consultation. And you can also find that link in the description of the show. And if you're interested about getting an ad-free version of this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/growthtoday to sponsor this podcast for as little as $2 per episode. Enough about me. Let's jump in my chat with Summer. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to finally talk to Summer. She is an email strategist and conversion copywriter. You know, I've seen her on Twitter, you know, we were running the same circles with Val, and I was like, I need to get this person on finally to talk all about e-commerce email and email marketing in general. How's it going, Summer? How are things with you?
Hey, Ramley. Thanks for having me. Things are going pretty well, all things considering.
Yeah, same here. It's summer. Can't really complain.
Yep.
Well, let's jump in. You know, before we talk about email, I love hearing people's story. I think that kind of helps people relate with the guests. Before we jump into email marketing, maybe you can share a little bit about your story on how you became an email strategist and conversion copywriter.
Absolutely. So it all started in 2008. I was a fresh graduate, newly married, moved to a new country. And as a fresh graduate, all I wanted to do was land a job and start working. And so this was Dubai, 2008. The recession hadn't hit yet. And every interview I would go to, they would say, oh, do you have a driver's license? And I would say, no, but I can get it. And they would like kind of smile or laugh and say, oh, come back when when you have it. And so I went to get my register for my driving lessons. And I realized that there was just a wait list waiting period to start my driving lessons was 6 months long. And so I was kind of stuck at home and not, you know, thinking about what do I do with my time. And I just Googled writing jobs online. I mean, I used to, you know, blog. Back then, personal blogs were a huge thing, and we had this citywide blog that I was a part of. So I kind of knew that I was good at writing. And so I found, almost immediately, I found a website that was paying me like $10 for an article, and I thought I had hit pay dirt. But what I'd really hit was a content mill, And it didn't take me long to realize that I had kind of gotten stuck in a rut of low-paying jobs. But eventually, I managed to climb my way out of it and build a business with as a freelance blogger and ebook writer. And I went on to write for brands like Marriott, Intercontinental, Aetna back then, I think it was Interglobal PMI. And so fast forward to 2017, I hit a payment ceiling and I hit a almost like I was burned out. I was writing a lot, but I was still not getting earning as much as I wanted to. And even though I was and I kept raising my rates and I was so burned out. I was like, you know what? I didn't even want to get out of bed. It had gotten to that bad. Mornings were never like my friend. And so I would sleep in, work late at night. It was a mess of a time in my life. And around then, Joanna Weeb released TEDx Freelance Copywriter, her mini mastermind / freelance business course. And I signed up thinking if there's anybody who can teach me how to do better, how to raise my rates, earn more without working myself to the ground, it's Joe. And I signed up. And within, I think it took me 2 to 3 modules to realize that the problem wasn't that I was burned out. The problem was that I think I was done being a content writer. And there was just no joy in it for me anymore. And so I started experimenting with different types of copy. And Joe was a copywriter. And the first thing she teaches in that course is like, be your own first client. And so I became my own first client. I started experimenting with different types of copy for my own business. I wrote a sales page. I hated it. Like I cried my way through it. I wrote a landing page. I didn't enjoy it. Website copy, didn't enjoy it. And then the only thing I did enjoy was writing a newsletter to my email list back at the time. And I wouldn't do it regularly. It was very sporadic, but every time I wrote it, I would get responses and, you know, it was a nice feeling. And something was clicking with my newsletter subscribers. So Val Geisler was in the same course with me and she was doing everything that Joe was telling us to do. And she was implementing and seeing massive growth. And she sent out a post in our Slack group saying, I have more work than I can handle and I'm looking for subcontractors. And so I messaged her. I said, listen, I don't have any email experience, but I am a fast learner. I don't make the same mistake twice and I never miss a deadline. So will you please give me a chance? And so she did. And she gave me 2 weeks to write a re-engagement sequence. And that first week, all I did was spend 4 to 6 hours every day just researching. And Ramli, I was in heaven. I was waking up at 8 a.m. with a spring in my step, which was so like such a novel thing for me. And so by the time I turned that first email sequence into her, I knew that I had found like my passion. And that email was my thing. And so that's how I got my start in email. And then I continued to work with Val for a while, which is how I got my SaaS experience. And there's Joe's courses. And I started working with my own clients. And then around last year, I started working with an agency that turned out to be an e-commerce email marketing agency exclusively. And I loved creating those emails as well. And so when that contract ended and I started looking for work on my own and, you know, working with my own clients, I was like, I want to work with e-commerce clients as well. And so that's how I now work with both SaaS and e-commerce clients. And it has been an absolute blast.
That's a cool story. It's such love stories that go up and down. Like it really does hit a lot of points. You're a great storyteller. Like I can tell right away. I'm not that great with telling stories. I just like hit the point right away. I'm curious, what's the difference between, you know, when you talked about email, you said you had a spring on your step. I love that. What's the difference between writing email versus like content writing that you were like kind of really losing passion for that?
So content needs to be like, I was a long form content writer, right? Because I mean, there's only so much that you can say within 500 to 800 words. And so when you are writing a 2000, 3000 word blog post, you can't get it done in, let's say, 2 days even. It takes at least 30 to 35 hours to create a blog post that is worth it. Like that would be worth my standards, to be fair. And so there's just a lot of effort and there's not enough. I mean, for me, at least, there wasn't enough pay. And my biggest issue with content was that clients weren't very interested in measuring the ROI of the content that I was writing for them. Right. So they were just content marketing for the sake of content marketing. Nobody had any tools or resources to really measure how many subscribers a certain blog post was bringing in, or where people were dropping off in a blog post. And so there, you know, there wasn't any experimentation also because there was no data. And so kind of this, all that led to me getting burned out. And if you notice, a lot of content writers get burned out and phase into other types of copy. And so there's this joke where they say, like, content writers have a shelf life. And my shelf life was 10 years. And I got started in emails like around 2.5 years ago.
That's a fascinating. I never thought about that, right? That totally makes sense. Well, let's talk about what you really love and give spring to your step, email. You know, we get so many bad emails. There's so much. I can't even start with that. You know, we're working with email for so long now. What are some common mistakes that, and let's focus on e-commerce right now. What are the common mistakes that e-commerce brands are making that's costing them customers and cash?
All right. So off the top of my head, the first thing, email, their entire email is an image. And so,
it's so
open
typical.
An email and I know I don't display images by default. So all I see are these 50 different alt texts and like boxes upon boxes. And then there's footer, there's no copy there. And that's just, I'm all about customer experience and customer journey. And so my experience really starts right there. And so, you know, just your copy should be your text and your images should be your images. Because I mean, great. If you know, most of you don't know which subscriber of yours has their images, you know, on as default and off as default. So why take that chance? Give them, let your copy do the job that it's supposed to do, right? Intrigue them, get them interested into displaying images. And so that's one. The other is including different types of call to actions in one email. Now, e-commerce emails should, depending on what kind of email they're sending, have multiple CTAs, but they need to be like one kind of CTA. So if you're, let's say, even if you're, you know, sending out a sales email that says like, that highlights different categories, it would say shop shirts or shop shoes or something like that. That would be like, it's something to shop, right? If you want to buy something from this category, you click shop, but you can't have like shop shoes, listen to our podcast, follow us on social media. That's kind of asking too much from a subscriber, and it's going to affect your conversions because podcast and social is not a conversion metric. Sales is. And so you want that to be your entire focus. The third thing that really, really gets my goat is a boilerplate welcome email.
Right? Yeah.
Every time I sign up to an e-commerce to their newsletter, they'll be like, hey, welcome to the family. Here's a 20% discount. And I'd be like, okay, but yeah, that's great. But what else? Right? So the welcome email is also one of the most opened emails. And so that's your chance to really set expectations, to build anticipation, to make them look forward to the next email. And if your welcome email is not doing that, then you're losing like a prime chance to connect with your audience. And so those are like three, and there's one more that I want to mention. This is stuff fires me up. I can go on forever. Last one, I promise. This is like not including return policy info in your sales email, your abandoned cart emails. But why wouldn't you do that? With online shopping, that's one of the major objections of shoppers. Like if I buy this thing, especially with apparel, and it's not the right fit, how am I going to get it back? Like, is it going to be a waste of money? So why don't you deal with that objection head on? I mean, it also means that your return policy needs to be customer focused and it needs to be super clear and easy, but do it. It doesn't take that much. So yeah, four, I'm stopping here.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, you should start a show called What Grinds My Gear. I remember from Family Guy where like, what grinds my gear about email? It's so good. I love it. I want to talk a little bit about something you said with welcome emails. You know, a big part about email is creating a conversion-focused email journey. How do you go about creating that? That maybe let's start with the welcome email. Like, what are things that you expect in the welcome email that you, what makes great welcome emails great?
Okay, so I am going to say my email journeys and customer experiences start off as simply as possible. The more I be complicated, the more it starts to feel like a chore, right? So start with simple. So I may be an email strategist and emails may be my job, but that's not where the journey starts, right? For the customer, the journey starts the moment they land on the website or the landing page or the opt-in form. So that's where I start. I go in and see what promises are being made, what copy is being used, how they're being welcomed or greeted. And then I make sure that that carries over to the welcome email because it's a continuation of a conversation that started on the website. And so, you know, if that's one part, like when you're saying you're kind of inviting them into your home. And so, you know, a welcome email needs to make sure that it is continuing the conversation that you already started with your customer. And it also needs to, again, treat them like humans. So one of my pet peeves with e-commerce emails is that everybody just gives a discount as an incentive to sign up. And I would rather that e-commerce businesses didn't do that because that kind of sets the precedent for like people would only buy from you if the discount is going on, right? And if you're giving them 10, 20% off from the get-go right out of the box, why are they going to want to buy from you at full price? And so instead, find other ways to add value, even if it's as simple as free shipping. And so just really focus on providing value in that welcome email. And so with the rest of the journey, even in the welcome sequence, is like it's when I start mapping it out, I follow like a simple two-question rule. What happens if the customer does what we want him to do? And what happens when they don't do, right? And by what happens, I mean what emails does the customer get in both these scenarios? And that's essentially how I map out my email journeys.
Interesting. Can you talk a little bit more about that? So let's say a customer does not do what you want them to do. It sounds like you drip them a separate kind of email. So how do you get them to make that purchase?
So let's say somebody subscribed to an e-commerce brand's email newsletter, right? And they go through the entire welcome sequence without buying anything, right? So now the question you need to ask is what do we want the customer to do next, right? The thing you want them to do is still buy from you. And so if they're not ready to buy at full price, maybe a discount will help, right? And this is the only time I recommend sending a discount offer. If somebody's been through your entire welcome sequence without buying, and so send them a discount offer. That's the time. And so if somebody has bought from you and as a result are now on your email list, then what you need is a second purchase from them. And so there are, you know, that they get a separate welcome sequence that kind of encourages them to make that second purchase.
And when it comes to that welcome series, I thought it was just one email. How many emails are typically in the welcome series that you put? Like,
so this really, really raises a few eyebrows when I tell my clients, but I recommend anywhere from 15 to 22 emails. Wow. Because a welcome sequence is a relationship building journey, right? And a relationship is not built in 3 to 4 emails. And there are so many different kinds of emails that you can send to show that you care about a customer, that you put them first, that you're building a relationship with them. So the welcome email is just that, the welcome email. What happens then? Are you sharing your brand stories? Are you sharing your social proof? What about how you got started? If you're a socially conscious brand, talk about that. And there's no rule that says you can only talk about that and not sell. Why not? Add a banner at the bottom of the email. Sell.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and the entire point of a welcome sequence is not that the customer will get to the end of the sequence. Like, and so it doesn't mean that they're going to go through all of them. As soon as they buy, as soon as they make that first purchase, they phase out of the welcome sequence. And then they move on to the next sequence, which would be the post-purchase. And then they'll get the post-purchase upsell, cross-sell. And then eventually they'll move on to the weekly newsletter. And so it's an entire journey. And, you know, we map it out.
When we come back in just a moment, Summer reveals her welcome series that's 22 emails long, and it's generated over $150,000 for an e-commerce brand that she's worked with. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are our RevOps and demand generation shop, and they help B2B SaaS businesses streamline operations, implement new tech stack, and design ABM and demand generation strategies. Now, they help you create a predictable revenue pipeline. Their past clients include OnFleet, HubDoc, Guest Logics, FlexDay, and more. You can book a free consultation at 42.agency/GMT. That's FourtyTwo.agency/GMT. And I know that my friend there, Camille, he is the founder of that agency. He knows what he's doing. So shout out to him. Go check it out. The link is in the description of this show. And one more thing, this weekly podcast is my labor of love for all things marketing. Now, if you like what I do here, please consider supporting this podcast on Patreon. Patreon allows the fans for the show to contribute as little as $2 per week, which is less than a cup of coffee a week. And you receive a ton of perks and goodies for this support. First, an ad-free experience of podcasts. Never listen to another ad from the show. Second, early access to every new episode before anybody else. Third, unlimited access to all the growth cheat sheets that I've ever created for this show. You can use that, apply to business, accelerate the growth of your company. And there's a ton more. You can find out more about this at patreon.com/growth today or find that link in the description. And if you can't give or don't feel like it, yeah, that's okay. I am just happy you're here listening in. Thank you very much. Enough about this. Let's jump back in my chat with Summer. What do you talk about in each email? Do you focus on specific products, specific problems? Like with SaaS, I my background is in SaaS, so I'm like, okay, let's hammer the problem and let's talk about benefits and how that can drive home. But like for e-commerce, it's slightly different. Like what kind of stuff do you talk about for those 15
emails? So yeah, so it's a repetition of some. There are sales emails in there. There are brand story emails in there. There are emails with social proof in them. There's customer stories, case studies, content emails also. Like if you're talking about a product and, you know, why not highlight all the benefits, all the problems that it solves? Talk about the problems that your brand as a whole solves. So if you're like a skincare brand, talk about common skincare problems. So it's a mix of things. But I always, it should provide value. So if you're talking about a product, then tell them why this product is, you know, relevant to them and why they should be buying it and what kind of results they can get.
That totally makes sense. I'm curious, like, you've worked with several e-commerce brands, I'm sure, already to implement this. Do you have any case study where, like, you know, we implemented this and this was the result?
Not yet. So post-COVID, things have really slowed down. Like e-commerce businesses, right, a lot of them had supply chain issues, and then they were like putting out fires one after the other. So even the ones that I wrote before, we haven't followed up with them yet because things just went to shit for almost all of them. And so as things are starting to open up, things are starting to get better. It's one of my things that in August, I need to go back, regroup, check in with my customers and see how things are going.
I want to talk about one specific type of emails, the cart abandonment email. And I've gotten several and it's very creepy, right? You're like, it's almost like a, you know, when you get retargeted with a product and then you go on Facebook, then they're like, oh, I was just looking at this, but now it's invading my email box. What are your thoughts about that? And how do you think about cart abandonment so it doesn't come across as, hey, you just checked out our product, make sure to purchase it?
So here's the thing. Abandoned cart emails are creepy by nature, right? you're telling somebody, hey, you were just on our website. I saw you. I saw what you were doing. You added a cart and then you didn't check out. It's like almost accusatory. And there's no getting around that. All right, let's just accept the fact that abandoned cart emails are crazy, creepy as F. But we can offset the creepiness by giving them the option to opt out of receiving future emails, right, about abandoning the card. Right? Let's acknowledge the fact that sometimes we change our mind and don't plan on buying, and that's okay. Let's not make our customer feel guilty. And so just give them the option, like, hey, we get it that sometimes we change our mind. If you didn't mean to buy, here's a link where you can opt out of receiving more reminders, right? And then think of it as taking away their objections. So if you think price is an objection, or you know, they don't opt out from that first email, also include your return policy. That's one of the biggest objections. So in that first email, just include your return policy and assure them that, hey, even if it's not a good fit, you can always return it to us. Here's our return policy, whatever. Even 2 to 3 sentences with a link to your return policy page is more than enough, right? And so if they don't opt out and they still don't check out, then send them a text-based only email from somebody from within the company, right? And it's an email that says, hey, would it help if we offered you a discount? Because abandoned cart sequences go on to offer discounts anyway. So if you are going to do that, make it sound like you're doing them a favor and make it a personal message and say, hey, would it help if we got you a discount? And if they say yes, send them the discount. If they say no, that's your window of opportunity to find out what's going on with them. Why are they choosing to not buy? And so send them a follow-up email asking, hey, can we take a few seconds of your time and ask you? So it could be like a one question survey that you get them to fill, or you give them options, like just click whatever option applies to you best. And so these are all like, when you put yourself in your customer's shoes, when you think about it from their perspective and think about it in terms of building a customer journey, you start understanding what they're feeling, what their objections could be, and how to treat them right.
That's so good. Yeah, that's something I notice a lot of card abandonment emails are, they just offer the discount outright. And I love that strategy. Just like, just ask them with a discount help. Do you find a lot of people, you know, working with e-commerce brands, I would respond to that, but like, do people actually do it?
Yes, I do it. I do it. And and I'm like a stickler for things, right? I would reply. Another pet peeve, sorry, going back to your first question, the no reply email address. Oh my God.
Oh, hate that.
Oh my God, how do I get in touch with you?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's annoying. But if it's not a no reply address, I almost always reply back and say, like, would a discount be coming? And so, you know, but I'm a marketer. I test things like that. So if it's not, like, most people are not marketers. So just do it. It works. People do appreciate when you put them first.
And you're asking for permission. I think that's a big part of it, is like, if this is going to help, then it's going to help you. But if it's not, then let me find out why. I really like that.
Even if it's not going to make that sale, isn't it better to find out early on so that you can move them to the next phase of the customer journey? And people, even if they don't buy, things like this build brand loyalty and brand appreciation. And these are the kind of things that see brands through pandemics and recessions.
Do you have a preference of who it comes from? Like whether it's a CEO or, you know, it's a customer success or somebody from support, like.
As long as it's a person with a first name and a personal email, it doesn't matter.
Let's talk about that welcome series again. I'm guessing one of the series has to be like somebody introducing themselves to be like that point of contact, right? So that when they get the card abandonment, they're not caught off guard. Is that what you suggest?
Not really. So my welcome sequences don't often have that. But like the sign off is important, right? Under the sign off, you say name, designation, brand name. And that's enough of an introduction a lot of times, right? Because with the email, when it comes, it's not brand name. It is name from brand. Get it? So like summer from emails done right. And so it's slowly but surely, customers and subscribers start associating you to that brand. And it's always like personalization is always important.
Is that another thing that grinds your gear, where it's like brand name, like from, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Should I write a whole blog post about like what grants your gearbox?
Yeah. Like I'm pretty sure I'm going to keep remembering stuff and going back to your first question and telling you, let's add that to it as well.
That's so good. I want to shift gears and talk about some of the other stuff that you're working on. I checked out your site and you've worked with some amazing folks. Like you talked about Val and Joanna from Copy Hackers already, but you also work with Paul Jarvis, yeah, the author of Copy of One. You know, what was it like working with Paul and Joanna?
In one word, amazing. Paul was the first client who trusted me to get it right. Right. And he gave me all the info I needed and then just left me to do my work. And there was no hovering, there was no micromanaging. And working with him was my first experience of working with the kind of clients that I wanted to work with. Right. And so I realized, this is the kind of person that I want to work with. These are the type of people that I want to work with. And so Paul just became that standard that I now expect all my prospective clients to meet. And with Paul, there's a funny story, because since you love stories, I'm going to share this with you. I was in the middle of a road trip in Dubai and we were heading into the mountains when his email came through, right? And I had just gotten a blog post published in Copy Blogger. And he emailed me saying, hey, I love that post. Would you be interested in writing a few posts for me? This was back in my content marketing days, right? And so I hit email reply and I'm replying and I'm hitting sending and the email is not going. And I realized, oh, damn, I'm out of my mobile data. And so I tell my husband, listen, what's the code to get more data? And he tells me, and he's like, you've got less than 2 minutes because we're heading into a no signal area. And I'm like, pull over immediately. And so he pulls over and we're like, the entire family is going. So there are 5 to 7 cars and everybody's pulling over thinking we've burst a tire. And my husband gets on and says, no, someone just needs to reply to an email before we lose signal. And so everybody's standing there waiting for me to finish that email. And I finish that email and I send it off to Paul saying, yes, absolutely. I would love to work with you. These are my rates. This is the timeline. And I was like, I included everything in that email because I wanted that yes when I came down from that mountain. And so I shoot that email off. And by the time we entered, and I think Paul was on his computer or something because he immediately, got back to me. And by the time we entered that no signal area, Paul Jarvis was a client of mine who had also transferred the 50% payment. And so that was one of the best road trips I had ever taken.
No, because of the scenery. It's because you closed somebody so big.
Absolutely.
That's so funny. Was it mainly content or did you write in any kind of email sequence?
I wrote case studies and blog posts for him. So since that was what I was working on. But with Joe, I was a lot more nervous. Not only was she my mentor, but since I was the one who reached out to her about a project, so there was this whole impressing your teacher element to it, right? And Joe's great, but Joe also has very high standards. And so because I knew she'd be evaluating the way I run a project, simply because she is the one who taught me how to do all this stuff, I knew she was going to put me through the ringer. And that is what happened. When it came to scoping out, when negotiating the rate, she tested me out. And I was like freaking out. I was like, what is Joe doing? She's the one who taught me all this stuff. Why is she acting like this?
Because she knows.
So I was panicking. I was like, oh my God, is this all a lie? And turns out she was just testing me because when she said, can you do this for like X amount less than what I had coded? And I said, yes, I can, but it's going to reduce the scope as well. And so we did a little back and forth. And in the end, she was like, this was legit a test of your training. You passed, original code stands, let's do this. Pretty happy to report that I passed that test and I did everything right. And we ended up going with the price I could. And so working with her was also a big confidence booster for me because I tested my process and systems on the person who had taught them to me. And so with her approval, that meant that my system and processes were solid and they worked. And honestly, I haven't felt nervous about hopping on a discovery call or running big projects ever since. I always strive to go above and beyond, but when it comes to doing my work, there is no imposter syndrome. And that was a huge turning point for me.
That's interesting. Can you talk a little bit about the email sequence? Because in the testimonial on your website, Joanna talks about like how, you know, you pitched this and it was amazing. What was that email sequence? I'm really curious with increasing their retention for their training program.
Yeah, so it was for the course in Mastermind that I was in, right? It's a 10x freelance copywriter. And after last year, and it's a 6-month course. After that, it's a membership mastermind. And so after the course ended, a lot of people were leaving the course. And I kept thinking, like, why are these people leaving? The Slack channel, the mastermind, gives us access to Joanna Weeb and Amy Posner, like, two of the brightest minds in this industry, and we get to learn from them. We get to go to them with our problems and our challenges, and they give us tailored advice. And so I was like, that's worth its money in gold. And so I reached out to John. I was like, now that the course is ended and all the content has been released, a lot of people are leaving. Do you know that? And she's like, oh yeah, that always happens. And I'm like, but it shouldn't, because the course is not the only value that you provide. And as I talked to those people who were leaving, I realized that they didn't know that they had access to Joe and Amy. And this was a gap in messaging, simply because not a lot of people use Slack. And so they never got around to finding out that there was a place that they could talk one-to-one with Joanna and Amy. And so I started to pitch her one sequence, which was, and I was using kind of like my SaaS training and using it on her course, where I told her, I'm going to create an onboarding sequence for your course, which walks the students through the entirety of the 6 months of those, right? And so they get one email every week, encouraging them, telling them what to do, what not to do, and stuff like that. And then I got the idea for a second sequence. And I said, and then once the course ended, that's not the end of the road. We need to nurture these freelancers to make sure that they keep doing the work and they keep putting in the hours. And so one sequence turned into two, an onboarding sequence for her course and a nurture sequence for her mastermind. And so that's how I pitched her. Like, I recognized the gap in her emails and I pitched her the project.
That's cool. And I'm, like you said, it went well, right? It was a booster for your
testimonial. Biggest thing ever.
That's true. You got some pretty big testimonials on your site, right? You got Val, mm-hmm. Paul, and Joe. That's really cool.
I have been very lucky.
Let's shift gears a bit. And before we jumped on a call, we were talking about the difference between SaaS and e-commerce and emails. What are, you know, you've set up emails for SaaS, you've set up emails for e-commerce. What are the big differences between the two of them when you're writing copy or creating sequences?
All right. So there is a big difference when it comes to SaaS and e-commerce emails, because SaaS is all about the onboarding sequence and the retention sequence, right? But with e-commerce, there are a lot more going on right off the bat, right? So there's the welcome sequence, there's the abandoned cart, there's the post-purchase, there's the post-purchase upsell, cross-sell. And if nobody buys from the welcome sequence, then there's the discount offer. And now there are, like, with e-commerce, there are 3 to 4 email sequences that I call the moneymakers, because you need to have them in place if you want to start making money from your emails immediately, right? And so then there's the part of about e-commerce emails that are more focused on relationship building, even though, like, the money-making email sequences should be doing that too. But again, the primary objective as a marketer for me is to make sure that my clients are making money from those emails, right? And so when it comes to relationship building, we talk about VIP program email sequences, right? Or just the weekly newsletters. Then there is the win back flow, the sunset flow, stuff like that. Those are email sequences that, you know, we want to re-engage our customers and bring them back and stuff like that. With SaaS, it's onboarding and retention. And that's pretty much it. Now, retention, of course, itself has a depending on SaaS and what their customer journey and situation is, there are a bunch of different kinds of email sequences we can create. But I find that they're different for every SaaS company. With e-commerce, I know that they're going to need 12 to 13 email sequences if they hire me to do the whole thing, right? And if I map out the entire email journey for them. So e-commerce is easier that way, because I know every business needs those email sequences. With SaaS, I know they'll need onboarding sequences, but then their retention sequences are dependent on what service they offer, how they do things, and what their customers expect. And so that's a lot more.
Which one do you have fun with more? And I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but you must have a preference.
I kind of have phases, right? So it depends on what company I'm working with. So my favorite, most favorite client ever is a B2B SaaS company, right? But I just have so much fun writing e-commerce emails. I mean, I've been going on and on about them. So I do love writing e-commerce emails, but more than that, I love strategizing e-commerce emails and building out customer journeys and email funnel maps for them, because it lets me see the whole picture and then it lets me present the whole picture to the client. And I love that aha moment that I see on my client's face when they realize, oh crap, I now understand the entire customer journey, and I'm always going to know where they stand, and I'm always going to know what email I need to send them. And so I feel like e-commerce is the one industry that needs the most help. Like SaaS has pretty much, matured. They know what they want to do and they know how to do it right. But e-commerce is the one where I need to kind of coach clients a little more. And so I kind of enjoy that.
I want to shift gears and talk about something that's kind of shaking up the email marketing world. By the time this episode comes out, Hey, which is an email marketing from Basecamp, would be public now. Anybody can sign up for it right now. We're recording this, it's invite only. And they block off like trackers, which, for a lot of email marketers, that's how they measure the performance of their email campaigns, right? So what are your thoughts about that? What are your thoughts about, Hey, and will this become the standard for email marketing? And yeah, I'm kind of loading it all on you, but like, what do email marketers do? What should we do? That's the final question is, what do we do with this?
It's interesting that you asked, because I just sent out an email to my email list yesterday talking about this. But in a nutshell, I don't think Hey's approach to email matters in the grand scheme of things, right? As a user, I really like what they're trying to do. It makes so much sense to me. And the way that they've organized the whole approach to email appeals to me as someone who has an incredibly chaotic inbox and I lose track of emails all the time. Right, my current system involves marking everything as a Google task, and it's gotten to a point where I don't even want to look at the right-hand sidebar with all the tasks there. But that is my current system right now, and so I like how Hey has really, really organized receiving email and made it so easy to just make snap decisions right there and then about what to do with that email. But as a marketer, I am still okay with their approach to email, to be honest. Probably because my focus is always on permission-based email marketing anyway. And so my email journeys and my email strategies are all about sending emails to customers that they want to receive, right? And to build the brand loyalty that would have them waving my emails through no matter what kind of obstacle there is. And so like all you have to do is approve the sender once. And Hey, if you can get them to do that, you're good to go. And with e-commerce especially, so what if you can't track those metrics, right? Sales are important. So if you send out an email and sales are coming through, that means, your email sequence is working. At the most, you could do something like isolate all the Hey emails on your list and send them separately so that you can figure out what revenue is coming through the Hey emails. Everything has a workaround. Everything is figure outable. I truly believe that. And if you put your customers first, you never have to worry about any kind of obstacles that email service providers might throw your way.
I like that. Everything's figure outable. You're right. I never even thought about segmenting all your Hey emails. That totally makes sense as well. I want to start wrapping up and love asking this question. If you had one or two pieces of advice to marketers about email, it's your jam, or conversion or content, it doesn't matter. You can give advice about life, but if you can leave like one or two pieces of advice to marketers, what would that be?
Always put your customers first. And as a marketer, it's your job to tell your clients about that also and make them think about it as well. Because when you do that, your sales and conversions will follow. But if you lead with a sales first mindset, you're not going to build the diehard brand loyalty that sees companies through tough times. And so put them first, the rest will follow.
I love that. Put your customer first. And you should tweet that. It's going to get a lot of likes and reshares. And one final question, where can people find out more about you? I heard you have also a course that's running, like, where, you know, if people are interested about this course, where can people find out about that as well?
So you can find out more about me. One is Twitter, which is my daily hangout water cooler thing. I am on Twitter all the time. My website is on emailsdoneright.com. And my course won't launch until the end of the year. So if you want to find out about learning how to do emails, get on the newsletter so that when I read.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Summer. I hope you have a great one.
All right, you too.
Well, that's it for this show. I just want to remind you to download that free cheat sheet with all the actionable tips, insights, and takeaways from this episode in a one-page PDF. You can take all the lessons from that, apply to your businesses, and accelerate the growth of your company. Why take notes when you can just steal mine? Go right ahead. Go to growthtoday.fm/105 and download it now before it disappears. Because I only keep up this week's cheat sheet until I publish the next one, which is next week. So make sure to get it now before I take it away. Before I end, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are a RevOps and demand generation shop. You can check them out at 42.agency/GMT. That's FourtyTwo.agency/GMT for a free consultation. And you can also find that link in the description of the show. You can also support me on this labor of love, this show for all things marketing in three easy ways. First, you share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn or tell a friend about it. This is one way that podcasts gain traction and gain more people listening to it. Second, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app so more people can find out about this show. This is how the Apple Podcasts and other podcasting app algorithm works. The more people subscribe and the more reviews there are, the more that it's promoted. And third, like I said, you can support me on Patreon for as little as $2 per episode to get an ad-free experience of this show and other perks. You can find out more at Grow Today. You can find out more at patreon.com/growtoday. Find the link in the description. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe, and as always, keep on growing. Passion.